It isn't pleasant to think about the trials that we will face in our lives. Some trials will be on the mild side, but some may be devastatingly painful. If God has made it clear that we will all be tested to determine what our character is, because He wants good character in His family. What I want to talk about today is what we need to do to endure the trials that will test us. The title of this message is, Do You Have a Trial Strategy? We all know the story of Job and what God allowed him to go through. Look at everything that Job was subjected to. If we begin reading in Job 1 and verse 2, it says, Job had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He was extremely wealthy. He had 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, that's 1,000 oxen, 500 female donkeys, a huge household. And this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. He had status, he had position, he had respect, he had authority. But in verse 14, I'm going to read 14 through 19. One day a messenger came to Job and said, The oxen are plowing, were plowing, and the donkeys feeding beside them. When the Sabaeans raided them and took them away, indeed they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, another also came and said, The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, another also came and said, The Chaldeans formed 3 bands, raided the camels and took them away, yes, and killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. And verse 18, while he was still speaking, yet another also came and said, Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the 4 corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they are all dead, and I alone have escaped to tell you. Think about the impact of that on Job. I did an experiment and I timed how long it took to read those 6 verses. Less than 60 seconds. What that means is that in less than a minute, from 4 separate sources, Job was informed that he had lost 7 sons and 3 daughters. You know, all of his kids. All of his sheep, 7,000 of them, 3,000 camels, his oxen, all his livestock, period, his entire household, his family, his wealth, his many employees. He was broke. He was alone. And we know the story of how God allowed Satan to inflict physical pain on Job then, by covering his body with boils. Now, when I was in my 20s, I had a boil on my left foot that ended up circulating through my entire lymph system. And it was so incredibly painful. One little boil. And I actually, at that time, had prepared things because I thought I was going to die. It took about 6 weeks for that to finally recover, but Job's entire body was covered with boils. We might ask ourselves, how did he remain faithful through all of that? He certainly had to have an emotional roller coaster there. It was possible because Job had a trial strategy in place. I'll get into more on that a little later. In the contemporary English version, I want to read Luke 22 and verse 31. This is Christ talking to Peter. And he says, Jesus said, Simon, listen to me. Satan has demanded the right to test each one of you. as a farmer does when he separates wheat from the husks. Now, the process of separating the grain from the husk and the tares is called threshing or winnowing. Think about what that process of sifting that Christ mentions entails. First, the grain is partially crushed. That helps loosen the husk and the hull from the kernel of grain inside. Then everything is tossed up in the air and allowed to drop while either fans were applied or a breeze was coming through so that the lighter husks and hulls would be blown away and the heavier kernels would drop to the threshing floor. Now imagine what that metaphor means when it's applied to us and our personal lives. Let's just look at that process just a bit of what it would mean to be sifted from the point of view of the grain of wheat. Remember, that grain of wheat represents you and I. Some events in our lives may make us feel like the very life is being crushed out of us. Things are then completely turned upside down, and we're buffeted about by circumstances that are beyond our control. We're thrown in a dozen different directions emotionally, so we don't even know which way is up. And then falling, until finally we hit the surface of the threshing floor and just lay there, emotionally devastated, wrung out, physically exhausted, thinking, what next? That whole experience might be comparable to someone being dropped from an airplane into the center of a tornado or hurricane or thunderstorm. Our being sifted by Satan can be an emotionally and sometimes physically violent experience. And sifting us each like a grain of wheat is what Satan is demanding that he be allowed to do to each and every one of us. And by implication, that permission will be granted. So we know what's in store for us at some point in our lives. I'm going to start with some trials that we're all very familiar with. They're so well known we don't even need to turn to the scriptures to refer to them. In Daniel 6, Daniel was thrown into a den full of lions, hungry lions, overnight, because he defied the king's edict that no one should pray to anyone but King Darius. Daniel had a strategy. In Daniel 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were threatened with and then thrown into a superheated furnace because they refused to bow down to the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar had made. They had a trial strategy in place also. In Genesis 22, Abraham was asked to sacrifice his son Isaac, and he was ready to go through with it when God stopped him. Now, we read those words, but can we possibly grasp what that means? What did it mean to Abraham to be told that the son that he had waited for decades was now going to be sacrificed under his own knife? You know, we read these things, but sometimes do we really get the emotion and the impact involved in the events that occurred? In 2 Corinthians 11, there's a brief summary of some of the trials that Paul was subjected to. Let's read that summary, beginning in verse 25 of 2 Corinthians 11. Verse 25, 2 Corinthians 11. Three times I was beaten with rods, once I was stoned, three times I was shipwrecked, a night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness, besides the other things, what comes upon me daily? My deep concern for all the churches. Now we read these four verses, and everything is all there in a nice, tidy little bunch of what summarizes the major trials in Paul's life. But just look at what he said. Three times he was beaten with rods, and once he was stoned. I mean, beaten with rods is a near-death experience. It isn't that he got smacked once across the fanny with a branch. I mean, he was pummeled to the point where I'm sure he was bloody and probably not recognizable. And that's just once, yet three times he went through that. And think about being stoned. You know, not the contemporary reference, but rocks hitting you. And yet he went through all of these things. He went without sleep. He labored on through exhaustion. He was cold and hungry many times, and yet never did he falter. You know, how did he endure those things? Paul had a strategy. The last of the examples that I want to look at is Jesus Christ himself. Now, if you've not read the book The Day Christ Died by Jim Bishop, I would recommend that you read it at least once, because it gives a very detailed account of the last 24 hours of Christ's life. And it really illuminates the things that he went through. And you know, he did that for us. And he endured that torture and that stress and the scourgings and struggling to carry the cross or the stake up the hill with the last of his strength. And he endured it because he too had a strategy to deal with trials. Let's take a look at those strategies that these people had in place. Job, in chapter 14 and verse 12, Job says, "So man lies down and does not rise till the heavens are no more." In other words, he dies. "They will not awake nor be roused from their sleep. Oh, that you would hide me in the grave," and he's talking to God, "that you would conceal me until your wrath is past, that you would appoint me a set time and remember me. If a man dies, shall he live again? All the days of my hard service I will wait till my change comes. You shall call and I will answer you. You shall desire the work of your hands." Job's trial strategy was his focus on God's promise of the resurrection. Job understood that this life is temporary and that what God promised in the future was so much better than anything in this life. Job was so totally committed to that future with God that he could endure whatever happened while he was waiting for that time to come. You know, Daniel, in verse 16 of Daniel 6, says, "So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, 'Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you.'" The king had been coerced into passing that decree that if, when the chimes rang, anyone who didn't bow down and worship him would be cast into a den of lions. Of course, he never thought about Daniel at the time, and he was really sad that this came about, because he liked Daniel and he knew Daniel trusted God. Verse 17, then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signets of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no musicians were brought before him. Also his sleep went from him. He was so distressed by what his friend, the position his friend got put into by the decree he'd been coerced into, that he couldn't even eat or sleep. And in the morning, verse 19, the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Now the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he believed in his God. Daniel truly believed the promises of God and that God would never leave him or forsake him. The same is true of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They knew that they were supposed to bow down and worship King Darius. And they refused to, and they, even when they were threatened with the fiery furnace, they said, our God will deliver us. They said in Daniel 3 and verse 16, they said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, that they would be thrown into the furnace, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fire furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. Those three young men had the absolute confidence that God would deliver them from whatever the king had threatened them with. They had studied the scriptures and understood and believed that God would protect them. Abraham, in Genesis 22, beginning in verse 7, Abraham and Isaac had journeyed up to the place where Isaac was to be sacrificed. And Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. Then he said, look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, my son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. So the two of them went together. Then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order, and he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. So he said, here I am. And he said, do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your only son from me. Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up for a burnt offering instead of his son. In Romans 4:3, it says, for what does the scripture say? It says, Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. We look at all of these, and there's one theme that runs through them, and that was their absolute trust in the Word of God. That was their strategy to deal with whatever they were going to encounter in life. no matter what it was. I'd like to read out of the Contemporary English Version in Hebrews 12 and verse 2 regarding Jesus Christ. Hebrews 12 and verse 2. We must keep our eyes on Jesus, and this is the Contemporary English Version. I like that just because of the way it portrayed this verse. We must keep our eyes on Jesus, who leads us and makes our faith complete. He endured the shame of being nailed to a cross because he knew that later on he would be glad he did. Now he is seated at the right side of God's throne. So keep your mind on Jesus, who put up with many insults from sinners. Then you won't get discouraged and give up. You know, Christ's strategy was to stay focused on his purpose and the plan he and the Father had worked out for all of mankind. Every one of these people were looking way into the future. They were not looking, they were not focused on the moment they were in. And this is what enabled them to look to the other side of the trial and realize that at some point things would be better. It's pretty easy to see that they all had a strategy to deal with any trials that would befall them. They didn't know what was going to come, but they were prepared. And this is so important, that we are prepared ahead of time. They didn't falter and they didn't hesitate. They completely and wholeheartedly trusted God and his promises. Now, some of the benefits of having a strategy in place are that having a strategy gives us clarity of purpose. We know what our goal is and what we want to accomplish. A strategy also helps us concentrate on a vision and how to accomplish that vision. A strategy allows us to look beyond the present to the end game, to the goal, to the prize, to the end of the race. And having a strategy can help ensure a successful outcome. And having a strategy also means that we are not put in the position of trying to figure out what we're supposed to do when we are suddenly faced with a trial, when we're in the middle of it going, what do I do? We already know. We are prepared. It's very common for people to have strategies for retirement, for vacation, for education, for traveling, for savings, or for investing, or for their career. But do we have a life strategy? Do we have a trial strategy for those things that we are going to encounter that are designed by Satan to derail us? In other words, how are we going to deal with the worst things that come along in our lives? When we get married, we agree to a marriage strategy, right? We agreed, at least Shirley and I, we agreed that we would forsake all others till death do us part, that we would remain committed to that marriage no matter what, in sickness and in health. And believe me, we have tested that. For richer or poorer, and we have been both. Richer's better, by the way. For better or for worse, and we've been through that too. But that is the strategy for marriage, and we've been married 53 years and counting. And we've been through all those things, but we have held fast to that marriage strategy, and we plan to endure to the end, both in our marriage and in our faith in God's promises. I've traveled tens of thousands of miles towing race car trailers to numerous tracks around the Midwest, as well as to Georgia, Virginia, Ohio, Indiana, Alabama, Kentucky, Tennessee, and many other states. And towing a trailer helps you develop a unique approach to driving. That is, whenever you pull into someplace, one of the first things you do is evaluate how you're going to get out of there. Because you can't always drive through. You have to know if you're going to be able to turn around, or will you have to back up in a complex maneuver to get the room, to change directions? Is there an exit road? If worse comes to worse, will I have to back all the way out? I've been in those situations. There was one time where I had to back a trailer under a car with two jet cars staging, waiting to go down the track, and we were right in their path. I can't say that I had a strategy for that, but it certainly motivated us. The main thing that you need to know is, how can I get out of here? That's the main thing we need to know in a trial, is what do I do? And if we have a strategy in place, we know that we will make it through to the other side. You know, the most important thing to remember about having a strategy to deal with trials is this. It must be solidly in place before the trial. Trying to make it up as you go along will not work. You know, that would be like trying to go buy insurance after you have the accident. I don't think any of us have ever tried to do that. But that's the same effect. It's the same principle. You have to have your strategy in place beforehand. Now, often when someone like a soldier or a fireman or a police officer or an EMT is interviewed about their actions in dealing with a crisis or some emergency situation, you will often hear them say, "My training just kicked in and I did what I was trained to do." Any of you ever heard that? You know, I've heard it several times. And it's a common answer to why they just jumped in and helped and tried to salvage the situation. And that's exactly what we need to be able to do when we're going through a trial. Let our training kick in and take over. However, there is a huge component of being able to do that. We must have trained. We must have trained. If we haven't done the training, we have nothing that we can rely on and fall back on. We must have studied and researched and learned the promises of God so well that we know with absolute certainty that we can rely on them, because God cannot lie. We know He'll never leave us or forsake us. We know that all things are possible through Christ who strengthens me. If we don't know those guarantees from God that we can trust absolutely, then we have no training at all to fall back on. A trial strategy means that you have one or more things that you can cling to as an absolute truth, that no matter what comes along in life, it will allow you to stay unconditionally locked on the target of entering the kingdom of God and becoming a part of His family forever. Brethren, do you have a trial strategy?